Chappell Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt joining us here in the studio. Have a happy Thursday to you.
Happy Thursday.
Yeah, it's been a while. I wasn't here last week. And
yeah,
I think we talked on the phone the week before.
So, that's right. Yeah, it's been a while since I've sat in this chair.
Yeah. So a couple of big developments, both locally and really on the state and national level this week that I want to talk about. First of all, this week is sort of the culmination or a culmination of what's being known nationally as the Fight for 15, which is this push by fast food workers in particular and low-wage workers in general, with a lot of organizations behind them, to raise the minimum wage to, they're calling for $15 an hour, but at the very least to raise it over and above where it is right now and has been for years and years and years. It's kind of been stuck. Politically speaking, it's unlikely, and I think we can say it's unlikely that the North Carolina General Assembly will raise the state's minimum wage at this point.
I think that's fair.
Right. It's unlikely that Congress will raise the minimum wage, insofar as it's unlikely that Congress will do anything at all.
Equally fair statement.
Local government's hands, like Chapel Hill town government, Orange County government, their hands are tied in North Carolina because
no authority,
lack home rule. So what can we do? I think here on this station, people out there listening to us in Chapel Hill, we're committed to the idea of a living wage. We understand the response, the push for a higher wage. What can we do locally to make it happen?
Well, I think we have to do what we always do in these tough political issues. You know, the president came out some time ago and began advocating for this, and alone his words aren't enough to accomplish it. And we need to see a grassroots response. We need to be there in support of those minimum wage workers, and or anyone who is making under $10, under $15 an hour. We need to be there when they demonstrate. We need to educate our neighbors and our friends and our coworkers about this issue, and begin to talk to people about how this is an ability. Raising the minimum wage is an ability to bring the tide in, raise all the boats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that I really am grateful that we're part of a local government and several local governments here, that are committed to living wage for their own employees. And so that's a place for local officials to start. And we've done that. We have every year a living wage study that's presented to us by our town manager, and we make sure that the lowest paid employees of the town are paid above that minimum living wage standard. So we are putting our money where our mouths are. And then now as individuals, I think we go out there and I think places like McDonald's are asking the Americans, would this buy us some goodwill? You know, as a provider of fast food, are you more likely to come to us because we're gonna if we begin taking care of our employees? And you know, we need to say yes. I think we need to be responsive to efforts by companies who are looking for ways to enhance their reputations, to say, yes, you're getting it right, and begin to support them, whether they're national chains or local businesses.
Mm-hmm. And we tend to do that with the usual suspects. We always talk about Costco and what a great job they do relative to the Walmarts and the Sam's Clubs, but we're starting to hear those moves coming from the Walmarts and Clubs, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we'd hoped for, right? When Costco came out years ago and said, you know, there's a way to be a better corporate citizen, and one of those ways is to treat your employees in a way that's better than our competitors treat their employees. Not only are you attracting better talent and inspiring greater productivity, but you're creating a competitive distinction between you and your competitors that hopefully that goodwill will draw in more consumers. And many of us have been pointing to them and saying, look, this is good. This is good practice, and this company is thriving, and they're still able to offer their goods and services at a fair price.
Yeah.
And so the more we talked about it, I guess the more the Walmart ears perked up, and they're realizing they were losing goodwill because of this negative comparison.
And we're speaking with Chaplain of America Mark Kleinschmidt. The reason I want to focus on the living wage, we've got a couple of other issues to talk about here today, too, also on the state level. But I really want to talk about the living wage and really keep the focus on it locally because, and we were talking about this before we even started today, everything that we talk about locally in terms of budget issues, in terms of economic sustainability, affordability, property taxes, sales taxes, our ability to pay for the services that we have come to appreciate and accept and almost take as a given in our community, all of these things come back to the idea of the living wage. The fact that people are having difficulty finding affordable housing in Chapel Hill is not so much a function of the fact that housing is costly, although it is. We could afford the housing if we could afford the housing.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the tautology, but there's multiple sides.
And particularly
when you're
looking at the lowest, the lowest wage earners in our community. And, you know, we have programs that target the 80 to 100% earner, and those are fine. But when you start looking down at the 30% earner, the biggest problem there is they're not getting paid enough, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true we don't have an adequate supply to meet the needs because demand is high and supply is low. So certainly we need to work on the supply side of that, but we also need to work on making sure that people are paid a wage that, because if you're at a 30% of the median income, you're going to have a hard time finding a place that's affordable anywhere in the region, not just in Chapel Hill.
Yes.
So it ultimately comes down in that context to they're just not getting paid enough.
Mm-hmm. So do you find, and we've talked about this in the context of sort of larger employers in Chapel Hill and in Orange County, UNC being, of course, mm-hmm. the big one, but there are others as well. Do you find that, or have you found in recent years, that businesses, companies, municipal organizations, government organizations like UNC are more responsive to this push to increase wages, to provide a living wage? Are we seeing positive developments in that direction here in our community, at least?
I think we are. You know, though, as you point out, the local governments, I think the school board just came in on this issue as well. And I would, you know, thank our school board member, James Barrett, for leading that effort. And I know all of his colleagues are very supportive. And we see our Chamber of Commerce, and prior to this issue of on wages, you know, before the ACA, there was the health care and whether or not businesses were going to be able to provide for their employees health care needs. And they, you know, went out in cooperation with Piedmont Health Services, have created an opportunity for small businesses to provide an affordable health care plan to their employees through Piedmont. And, you know, I think those kinds of efforts are reflective of a local business environment in which, businesses are rewarding each other and themselves, and local consumers are rewarding businesses who care about these issues.
Mm. Are there ways that we can get the word out about businesses who care about these issues? I think in Asheville, there's and in other communities around the country, there's a pledge that businesses sign not to say that there's not a fairly ugly history of people having to sign pledges in America, but there's a pledge that people can sign to say we provide our employees with a living wage. Is that something we can do here?
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some local organizations who I think could take up that effort and verify mm-hmm. those pledges, whether it be Justice United or other organizations here locally. Of course, if I knew somebody who had a means of like mass communication to the public, I mean, where stories could be told about businesses who do that, that might be helpful.
Are you looking at me directly here?
And I'm looking right at you.
Well, we'll get the word out about it, and I think this is a really good mission, especially with the 5 for 15 this week, but this is, you know, it's sort of culminating with the demonstrations around the state and around the country mm-hmm. this week, but it's going to be ongoing, and this is going to be an ongoing conversation until it's solved, which is going to be a matter of years, and that's optimistic.
I think
this has never been solved, but we can work towards it. One of the things, and I want to shift focuses here, because there's another development happening in Raleigh, kind of a few policies.
Oh, no, not Raleigh again.
Right? I have to say, every time I hear a story about the NCGA considering something, it always makes me feel a little bit better in my heart because, you know, we talk about the NCGA, and I know a lot of people out there are progressive. They listen to this, like, oh, God, Raleigh's doing something. But at least they're doing something, even if we don't agree with it. It's a testament to how dysfunctional Congress is that Raleigh government is actually, they've got a vision. They're trying to implement it. We don't agree with it.
You're really stretching, but you have identified an achievement of this legislature. That's true. That something is
something
happening.
Which is
may not be
I guess,
anything
step number
that
one.
We or your listeners might want
or anything like that. But there are bills moving through the NCGA,
yes.
And a couple of them have to do with election law, and they're talking about several this week, and three in particular that I want to mention. One that came out earlier this week to make judicial races and school board races partisan as opposed to nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
Another one to put the governor and the lieutenant governor together on the same ticket, so we vote for them as one ticket, like president and vice president, as opposed to making Dan Forrest run for re-election separately. I don't even know. Whoever that is. And the third one, which may affect us here locally a little bit more directly, and now I'm looking at you because you're up for re-election later on this year, and again, still well
so my
before.
Term is up at
your
this
term
year.
Is up at the end of this year. So if you run for re-election, it will be later this
not
year.
Not making news today.
Right. I thought I'd give it a shot.
Okay.
But it's an odd-numbered year. It's 2015, and that's when municipal races take place. And a proposal that's going through the General Assembly now, how far it will get, we don't know, is to move municipal elections to even-numbered years. So
yeah.
2014, 2016,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to 15, 17. What do we think about all of these?
Oh.
What do you think about all of these?
I don't think well of it, that's for sure. This is just...
It would increase turnout.
But it would it wouldn't mean that we had better informed voters.
True.
You know, I think we need to generally improve the quality of voter education,
yes.
so that people understand the need to vote every time the polls are open, and there is value in not having everything on the ballot at one time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you hear stories about California's ballot, which is pages and pages long. A lot of that is due to the fact that they have an initiative process there,
right.
and they have all these different amendments,
which is apparently really easy to get on, considering some of the initiatives that are coming
crazy
out of
stuff.
That.
You know, like what? Yes, on initiative 152. You know, can you imagine there's 152 items on or more? But
I think there were that many people running for
For governor whenever Schwarzenegger you know.
I was actually thinking state court of appeals last year.
Oh yeah, and we saw how well that worked. You know, it just became a sea of names that nobody knew.
Yeah, I forgot
understood.
About governor's race. Gary Coleman and a porn star losing barely to Arnold Schwarzenegger. That was a classic
that was a close
race.
One there.
Yeah.
But you know, there's ballot exhaustion issues. I think that tend to push people away from the polls. So. When or they leave these ballots that are incomplete because they just don't have the time to get to everything, or they don't or to educate themselves about every race. So it's helpful, I think, to the democratic process if you have engaged voters to have elections that ask voters about particular issues and particular offices at different levels of government. And that's one of the reasons we have it the way we do today. I believe that, you know, that. In trying to make these local races, school board and municipal races, partisan, I think this is reflective of the legislature's concern that the League of Municipalities and the Metro Mayors are so upset about the attacks that they've made on cities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, surprise, you know, you start taking away revenue options, you start... They've actually gone in and redistricted the county commissioners in Wake County and other places. They've taken
several counties.
Several counties. They're threatening to redistrict the city of Greensboro. They are, they've taken away water facilities
control,
and airports from cities. And so, you know, so the cities are a little disappointed in that. well, one way, I guess, and this is actually what I believe is going on in their minds, is that they believe that if they make the municipal and school board elections partisan, that they will for folks who just reflexively vote for a particular party, that will increase the likelihood, and particularly if they are the ones who redistrict cities and counties, increase the likelihood that they will have allies who are elected to these local boards, and help mitigate the concerns expressed by the local jurisdictions. In addition, it also helps them with their bench building. You know, when you look out past this term, you know, they have a concern, I think, a legitimate concern around the changing demographics of North Carolina. So they gerrymandered this state up pretty well in 2010 for that moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
But the demographics haven't been static. So these districts that they thought were safe are now you know, coin flips, and they're going to see more and more of their members become at risk for maintaining their seats, or at least it's staying in the same party. So they're trying to build a bench of candidates who identify with the party And if they can district them in well enough at the school board and city level, then they'll become candidates for the state legislature. Mm-hmm. You know, I told a friend of mine, you know, they came and they took over the legislature. By doing that, then they took over the congressional delegation with their gerrymandering of congressional seats. That wasn't enough for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like they had taken over the continent and then saw the cities on the horizon. You know, you could just see the Mongol horde seeing Vienna. It's like, oh, we're not done. We've got all of Asia, but there's a city. Let's go take it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what they're...
You know, the headline tomorrow is going to be Chapel Hill Mayor refers to General Assembly as Mongol hordes, right?
Just the Republican Party.
Yeah, okay, there we go. As long as we're clear. Right.
Not Verla and there was a Val and Greg.
Just so we're clear. There was a proposal on the table just a little while ago. They got a big splash press conference, and we were really excited about it here. I think we covered it live, that bipartisan proposal that had progressives and really strong conservatives up on the dais together promoting an independent redistricting commission, which was finally getting back on the table after being discussed. And it was this big, huge deal, and so many people were on the podium together, and nothing's come of it.
But not the right people.
No, apparently not the
right people. The right people were not on the podium.
The people who are in control of deciding which issues get voted on.
That's right. Unless you have the president pro tem and the majority leader and the majority whip on your side in the state Senate, it doesn't matter what else you have. Mm-hmm. And that frees up some Republicans in the Senate, for example, to stand there and demonstrate their support, because they know it means nothing without one of or all three of those leaders backing it. They will stop a bill in its tracks. They'll send it to Ways and Means, which is the cemetery and of good bills. And I know our friend Val Fushi has bills that have ended up in Ways and Means, and she knows what that means.
Mm-hmm. And Ways.
She knows
where
it's going to go.
Yes. Yeah.
And the means in which they're going to use to undo all of her efforts.
All right. Yeah. Well, with that, we have to let you go.
Okay.
We'll be more optimistic next week, I think.
Sure.
Maybe.
Let's just commit to doing that.
Oh, next week is our forum. You'll be here at 8 in the morning. It'll be great.
Oh, that's right. We'll start really early.
Next week is the community forum, everyone. So tune in. We'll be talking about, I don't even know what issue we'll be talking about at 3 o'clock, but it won't be in this room. It'll be down the hall.
Right. And I'll be on at 8, I think, that morning.
8 a.m. with Carol Fold, Earl McKee, Lydia Lavelle, and Tom Stephens.
It'll be a great conversation.
Good conversation.
Great friends and good conversation.
All right. Sounds good. Mayor Klontschmidt, thank you so much.